Okay, turn to Genesis chapter 3 as we begin our walk through the book of Genesis. We've seen the creation and the conditions that man was living in, Adam and his wife Eve, who wasn't Eve yet. And then the tragic fall and the circumstances behind that, what took place. We've worked our way through this and come to the consequences. We saw as Satan talked to the woman, trying to downplay the circumstances, and even in her response to the serpent, she kind of downplayed the consequences that would take place if you were to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which they were forbidden to do, but did. So we started on the curse. We talked about the curse to the serpent and his participation, the curse of that God pronounced upon the woman. Oops, I went one page too far. No wonder I couldn't read the right thing. Unto the woman he said, I will greatly multiply sorrow in thy conception, and sorrow thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. And we discussed this and the implication here. We got started on Adam, and he said unto Adam, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of your wife and hast eaten of the tree, of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for your sake, in sorrow or pain or suffering shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground, for out of it thou wast taken. For dust thou art, and unto dust you will return. So this is the curse that was given to Adam. Instead of being in charge of the garden and being caretaker, not really having to work to provide food because God had provided all that he needed, now he was going to have to work for it, which is what we find ourselves in, right? You have to work to supply for your family. You can't just, pardon me? You ought to have to work, yeah. Well, the world is getting kind of twisted and going downhill. But, so that was the curse. I want to read a paragraph out of this book on Genesis. It says, the curse of man was fourfold. Sorrow resulting from continual disappointment and futility. Kind of sounds like work nowadays sometimes, isn't it? Disappointment and futility. But that was part of the curse. Pain and suffering signified by thorns, which intermittently hinder man in his effort to provide a living for his family. Isn't that what thorns do? Just when you don't see them, they stick you, don't they? And that's the meaning of this. Pain and suffering. Sweat or tears is the strong crying of intense struggle against a hostile environment. And we can see how that applies, especially if we had farmers among us, and how you struggle to provide the right circumstances for those crops to come up. And then who knows what takes place, windstorms, hailstorms, crops get damaged all sorts of ways. If you've had a garden, you've probably had things destroyed one way or the other. And all that work that you would have to put into that. And then the last one, physical death, which would eventually triumph over all man's efforts with the structure of his body returning to the simple elements of the earth. Dust you were made from, and dust you're going to return to. So we see the curse pronounced upon Adam, and what the results or the implications of that. Verse 20, it says, "And Adam called his wife Eve because she was the mother of all living." Eve actually means life or living. Many scholars believe that this is actually a testament to Adam's faith at this point. If you stop and think about, they were told, if you eat of it, you shall what? Surely die. So there, if you were in their place, what would your assumption be? This as soon as you eat this, you're going to croak over dead, right? To put it mildly. Yeah, but still, you're going to die. You're going to assume. I mean, Adam wasn't a dummy. Adam was extremely intelligent. So I'm sure that they understood the restriction and the penalty for doing that. So after having done that and not being dead yet, what would you be thinking? At any minute now, it's possible that I could die, right? Because that's what I was told. And maybe not completely understanding what that meant in dying, and we've talked about that, that actually death had incurred, it actually started in several areas. Spiritual death, physical death started at that point. Doesn't mean you're going to die right now, but the process of dying began at that point. So the fact that Adam names his wife Eve, which means, what did I say it meant? Life or living, actually would seem to indicate that Adam had faith in the fact that even in the curse, God said that the woman was going to have what? She was going to struggle in what? Childbearing, which means even in the curse, God says that you will have children. So obviously you're going to have to live long enough to have children, right? So this is actually, most believe, an admission of faith on Abraham's part that he would even name his wife Eve, something that means life, and live, or Adam, sorry, yeah, would name his wife Eve with that implication there. Excuse me. Verse 21, "Unto Adam also and to his wife did God make coats of skins and clothe them." Coats of skins come from where?
Animals.
Animals can live without their skin, right? No, sorry. Which means that obviously a couple of animals, one or at least one, maybe two, had to die in order to cover the sin. We see the picture here that their sin or their guilt, the fact that they were trying to cover themselves of their nakedness because of sin and guilt, God provided a covering for that, which is a reminder to them of their sin and that God provided the covering for them, but that required the loss of life to cover sin. So we see that picture. How much of that they comprehended at this point, I don't know. As we get a little further along, in the book of Genesis, we'll come back to this point here, that God had provided for them a covering, but it required the loss of blood, the loss of a life, and that sacrifice. Sacrificed by someone who, by the way, was what?
Innocent.
Another point that we need to keep in mind. That animal, whatever it was, didn't do anything wrong, did it? But yet, it suffered. So, we see that picture here as God provides a covering for them that at this point only God could provide. So keep these things in mind as we continue along. Verse 22, "And the Lord said, Behold, this man is become as one of us to know good and evil, and now lest he put forth his hand," excuse me, "and take also of the tree of life and eat and live forever. Therefore, the Lord God said sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. So he drove out the man and placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubim, which is a heavenly being, an angel, and a flaming sword which turneth every way to keep the way of the tree of life. So we see God here saying, okay, you can't live in the garden anymore. Part of the curse is you've got to go. So he removes them from there, and then so that they don't partake of the tree of life, which means they would then live forever, which is what God said would take place if you ate that. It's still in my mind, it's interesting that they hadn't eaten of that fruit while they were in the garden already, before they ate of the other fruit. Why, I don't know. But it seems to me you got a good fruit that you can eat of and you're allowed to, and a good fruit, well, a fruit that you're not supposed to eat of and you're forbidden to, and why wouldn't you eat of this fruit? But anyhow, neither here nor there. Excuse me. So, God puts them out of the garden and then protects them from going back in to the garden. It says here that the man has become one of us to know good and evil, and this is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, partaking of that. Prior to this, what had Adam and Eve known?
Good.
Had they known anything but good? No. They knew nothing but the goodness of God and all that he had provided for them. But they decided to experiment and find out about evil. And now they were going to pay the consequences. Kind of like us many times, right? We know of God's goodness, don't we? And how God has provided for us and watched over for us in many different situations, many things that have gone on in our life. We know God's goodness. But sometimes we want to, through our sin nature, want to experience the world, don't we? And sometimes we get caught up in wanting to experience that as well. Same thing that they did. And I mentioned this last week. I'll mention it again this week. I don't know if I'll mention it again. a little saying that I've heard, I've got written in the back of my other Bible. I haven't written in the back of this one. About sin, and you've probably heard it before, but I'm going to say it again. Sin will keep you longer than you ever wanted to stay. You know, we want to experiment. This man wants to experiment a little bit. You know, I want a taste of this forbidden fruit, things that we're not supposed to participate of, but I want just a little taste to see what it's like. I want to experience what's in the world and what the world has to offer. But it'll keep you longer than you ever wanted to stay. I just want to try it out and then go away. Doesn't always happen that way. Sin will take you farther than you ever wanted to go. In other words, once you get started, it will keep at you and you will go farther into that than you ever wanted to go if you're not careful. And what applies here more than anything else is sin will cost you more than you ever thought you were going to have to pay. When we experiment into the world and what the world has to offer, it always costs us more than we ever wanted to pay when we get involved in that. And that is the point at which Adam and Eve are at this point. Now they're out of the garden. Now, what the conditions were like out of the garden, we would have to assume that it's still, it's not like they left a lush garden and they were shoved out into a desert, barren, right? Because God had created the world and the plants and the grasses of the field and everything that man needed, but he also created a special place. And that's where they were evicted from, if you will, removed from that garden, that special place. But according to the curse, they were going to have to work towards providing food outside of the garden. So there would have been trees, and I would imagine some fruit there, but not like in the garden. So, you know, you can find fruit trees around here too, but is it enough to live off of and provide for your family? Maybe for a few days till you get tired of eating apples or something. You know, you might find this and that, but it's not in abundant supply like God had provided in the garden. So now they're in this whole new area, this whole new experience in life. And I don't know that you can picture in your mind, but what that would be like to be put in a foreign place where everything's completely different than what you were used to up to this point. It's always interesting to, and we've talked about this in class before, what's the timeline here? I know Doug's timeline from creation to the fall is about a day and a half, Doug said. Could be. I don't know how long they lived in the garden. It doesn't tell us how long they lived in the garden. Could have been a fairly longer period of time. I don't think years, and we'll get into that in a little bit here, why I don't think so, but we don't know how long they were there. Like Doug says, you know how long we would last? Half a day. But again, we have a sin nature. They didn't have a sin nature yet, but they still made that choice. So timeline, it doesn't tell us. Is it that important? No. And again, as we go through this and we look at some of these details and try to figure out things, that's not the most important part. God has given us the information that we need, and all the little details are interesting to try to figure out how this would work and that would work. But it's not that important. If it was that important, God would have put those details in. But he's given us enough that we know what took place. So, excuse me, as we get into chapter 4, we see, and Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bare a son, Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord, or I have received or gotten a man with the Lord. So Eve here is pointing out the fact that through God that she was able to have a child. So we see the incidents of the first son being born to Adam and Eve. And again, if you go back to timeline, when would this have taken place? Well, at a minimum, it would have been, about 9 months after the creation of man and woman, right? I mean, God told them to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. So you would assume that 9 months would be a minimum period of time, and whatever would be the maximum period of time, but I can't imagine it would be long after that. It doesn't say that Adam didn't know his wife until after the fall, so chances are that took place before then. But anyhow, so we have the first son being born to Adam and Eve. Cain was his name. Cain means gotten, is derived from her explanation of joy, of her acquisition or being able to get a man from the Lord. Verse 2, and she again bare his brother Abel. And Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. Abel means, let me find it here, I got it somewhere, vapor. Interesting. Why would she name Abel vapor? Well, from the commentaries I've read, they're assumed that she's realized because obviously if Cain was born, Abel's not born the next day, right? You got at least another 9 months, so keep in mind the time frame here. Maybe by that time she's understanding the penalty of sin and the shortness of life. They don't know how long they're going to live, but anyhow, Abel means vapor. Interesting here, God said that you're going to have to go out and work the ground, right? To provide food for your family, sustenance to, for survival, you're going to need food. That food's going to come from the ground, right? Because they didn't eat meat. That was not allowed at this point, not till after the flood. God condones that. So they weren't eating meat. So Cain is a tiller of the ground, so he's a farmer. And Abel is a keeper of the flock. You ever think about that? Why is he keeping a flock? What are they keeping a flock for? You don't eat the sheep. Okay, we're going to get to that in a minute. Yes, possibly sacrifice. Maybe they use the sheep for sacrifice. What else do you get from sheep? There you go. If there's other people, you're going to have some kind of what? Covering. So you are not going to go out and kill an animal like God had to. You're going to provide some other way. Here's a good way. You can shear the wool off the sheep and make wool, right? Now, how did they know how to do that? I don't know. Maybe God told them.
How did they know how to do anything? I
mean, right.
God had to give them that insight.
Right.
You couldn't call your neighbor and say, hey.
Right, yeah, how did you do this? you're right, but we know that if Adam and Eve were created in perfection, that they obviously were extremely intelligent, not like us dummies nowadays, right? So therefore, being highly intelligent, and maybe God, as we get a little farther here, we'll talk about this, it doesn't mean that God didn't talk to them at all. Maybe God still fellowshiped with them, and we're going to get to the ability to do that here in a minute. But God could have explained things to them. He could have still taught them. He could have still fellowshiped with them, as long as some conditions were met. And we're going to get to that in a minute. Doug.
Well, Abel, he had to talk to him because right there in verse 9, the Lord said unto Cain, where is Abel thy brother? So he
right.
definitely talked to
him. Right, right. But it wasn't just in bad circumstances, is what I'm saying. There's still a possibility that God was fellowshipping with them. So anyhow, before we get too far, it says, interesting here, in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord, and Abel also brought of his firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof, and the Lord had respect unto Abel and his offering. Excuse me. The interesting part here is verse 3 says, and in the process of time it came to pass. What does that mean?
You tell us.
Okay.
That means they're older.
Right, right. I think they're both adults at this point. So in the process of time, at a point in time, actually this mean in the process of time means the end of days, which is interesting, exactly what that means. At some point, Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground, because that's what he did, right? That's what he was good at. He was the farmer, so he raised the crops, and whatever those crops might have been, that's what he brought. Abel brought of the firstlings of his flock because that's what he did. Yet we find that, go ahead.
In the fourth verse, it says that Abel brought of his flock and of the fat.
Right.
That's like twofold.
Well, this is really describing the best, right? The firstlings and the fat, the fattest, the biggest, the best. So that's the description here, is he's bringing the best of what he had. Do you think Cain brought the best of what he had?
It doesn't say that,
but you would have to assume that he brought the best that he could from what he grew. excuse me, it says that God, and the Lord had respect unto Abel and his offering. So God respected his offering. Let me read about the firstling of the flock here. It refers to the fact that Abel's offering was accepted because it was a blood sacrifice based upon previous knowledge. Now, we don't have the record of this previous knowledge, but for God to, well, let me read the next one. But unto Cain and unto his offering he had not respect, and Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. So we know the picture here. God accepted one but didn't accept the other. Why? Well, because one was according to what God had desired and one wasn't. We know that because we got the rest of Scripture, but they didn't. But somehow, God must have instructed them that there was a proper way to do this, and this is what I want you to follow. Now we jump back to, if this was indeed the case, that they brought offerings, which are a picture of a blood sacrifice, which would take place with the Redeemer later on. If they were told to do this at a certain regularity, then as they would bring the sacrifice before the Lord, that would, we know according to the Old Testament, would cover their sin at this point, right? And therefore allow that fellowship between God and them, that quite possibly this was something that had been done for years at a predetermined period of time. And I don't know if it's the end of days. Some people think this referred to the seventh day, because that's the end of days, that this would be something that they would have done once a week, brought an offering before the Lord. And therefore, then they could fellowship with him as they covered that. So in the process of time, at some point in time, and we don't know for sure, but had Cain brought previous offerings? If they were grown adults, at what point did they start bringing offerings? We don't know. Had Cain brought the proper offering prior to this? We don't know.
Even if Cain hadn't brought offerings, right? He still has his parents, right?
Right, right.
He still has Adam and Eve that he would have looked at.
Right.
Who would have been in fellowship with God. And he would have seen what they brought.
Right.
And, I mean, at least through trial and error, and then watching their trial and error.
Right. Right, right. He saw their example, and for that matter, Abel's example as well. So whether it was the first time or after a period of time, so if we jump back to Abel, Abel was a keeper of the flock. So now we see where this might fit in. The flock's good for wool, for clothes. It's also possibly for sacrifice. So if he kept the flock, and obviously there were more children born to Adam and Eve, so it's not like Cain and Abel, and then there's this massive period of time before anybody else was born. You have to imagine they continued to have children for quite a period of time, right? So Cain and Abel, and then sisters and brothers, and brothers and sisters, and sisters and brothers, and brothers and sisters, there's quite a few people, right? So this isn't just four people that we're talking about. So there are others there involved too. If Abel were the keeper of the flock, then obviously people would have to come to him to get a sacrifice, right? So there was the source of sacrificial material, if you will, as well as possible clothing. So now we see the importance of Abel keeping the sheep, and for that matter, the importance of Cain being a farmer. There was nothing wrong with either one of these occupations at all. It was what took place. Again, whether this was Cain and Abel's first opportunity to sacrifice or not, they still would have understood, being raised by Adam and Eve, what the process was. Let me read a paragraph here before we get out of time. It says, the Bible does not actually say specifically whether such sacrifices had been commanded by God or whether the process arose merely as a spontaneous expression of thanksgiving and worship. It's difficult to understand the second one if it hadn't been commanded by God. It is difficult to understand why God would not have been pleased with an offering of Cain's fruits if it was just something that they voluntarily did. You know what I'm saying? So either God had commanded it, or this was just something that they decided they were going to do. If this is something they decided they were going to do, then the rules would have been, bring whatever the best you have, right? But if it was something that God had commanded them that we're not told about, then we understand why there's regulations and rules and time frame and all that involved. Excuse me. It seems more likely that God did give instruction and that Cain had disobeyed. The entire occurrence can only be really understood in the context of an original revelation by God regarding the necessity of substitutionary sacrifice as a prerequisite, I hate that word, to approaching God. In other words, you can only explain this or understand this with the fact that God had informed them that this is what he wanted done. And this is what's necessary to come to me in fellowship, is this substitutionary sacrifice that we see throughout Scripture. Such revelation was most likely given at the time, well, according to him, that God provided coats to Abraham and Eve. So according to this author, he thinks that sacrificial process was explained to Adam and Eve at the time that they received their coats or their covering, which it's quite possible, right? I can't say it was, I can't say it wasn't, but it's quite possible. Maybe Adam and Eve stood there and had to see that animal die to receive those coverings. I don't know. We don't know. But yet that sacrifice was given. So such revelation was most likely, according to him, given at the time that God provided coats of skins for Adam and Eve, and then banished from his presence, providing, however, specific means by which they could still commune with him at certain times on the basis of a similar sacrifice. In other words, this is the first sacrifice, and you can commune with me as long as those sacrifices are brought, which we see explained later on and done throughout the Old Testament with the Israelites, right? They brought those sacrifices to cover that sin for a period of time, and then they could fellowship with God. The author goes on to talk about, where did this take place? Maybe it took place right outside, right at the gate to the Garden of Eden. That would have been a picturesque place to be, right? Also reminding you that you can no longer enter that place. This is where you started, but because of your sin, this is where you're at now. But if you want to come fellowship with me, bring your sacrifices here. Again, it doesn't tell us, which means it's not really important. We have the information that we need is important here. So Cain, at some point, and maybe he, again, either this was their first time or this was after multiple times, but at some point came to the point where he did not want to do it God's way. Unfortunately, we didn't get through this, but we'll continue with this next week. The key here is sometimes we get the same way, right? Sometimes we don't want to do it God's way, and we rebel as well. Again, we'll continue with this next week. Lord bless you this morning. You're dismissed.